It's probably the question that I would have asked to be put in front of me. That is a moral, political machine that you're putting out there, and it does need to be properly tested. AI can make things a lot better, as Michelle has been saying. I mean, access to more information can give opportunities to people who don't fit a traditional mold.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's episode. AI in financial industry. So as you know, AI is disrupting many industries and will continue to do so. And we have covered this topic of AI in finance in the past, and because of tremendous interest from all of you, so we wanted to bring the topic back. So today, we'll be talking about risk management, the opportunities and challenges, but from a very practical perspective. Because since we talked last time, a lot has happened. A lot of use cases are being implemented. And we are also seeing some of the risks, the model risks and data risks and other aspects that are coming into the picture. And so we'll be talking more about those kinds of things from a practical perspective today. So it should be pretty exciting. So welcome to all of you. And thank you for supporting. So with those things out of the way, so I'm excited to get started with a couple of panelists that we have with deep expertise in the area that we're talking in. Okay, so first, let me bring those experts. David Van Bruyn, he's the co-founder and CEO of Fairly AI, and Michelle Alari, she's the director of model risk management at Pathward Financials. So with that, David and Michelle, welcome.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Great. So so I know I gave a very brief introduction. So let's get started with a little bit more. Michelle, if you could introduce yourself and what you do at Pathward Financial, please.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me. So pretty much I'm the director for the risk at Pathward Financial. I do have a background of enterprise risk management in general with a specific focus in credit risk management. Over the last few years, I dived into the field of model risk management, which also includes AI application. And before we dive into this conversation, I would like to put a disclaimer out there that the view that I express today are entirely my own and not that of my employer.
Great. So yeah, 3 years is, I'm sure a lot happened since you started working on AI. So David, please go ahead.
I've done a lot of research in artificial intelligence in grad school at Cornell and Berkeley, mostly with natural language processing and with predictive models. And I used that for my first startup, which I used for applying the technology in social media and other applications to keep children safe online. I sold the company and I managed to put a lot of those practices that I had learned very practically into a platform that we are now doing at Fairly AI. And working with a wonderful team, we've been able to manage the risks in financial services on a large number of different types of applications, including lending models that predict the next kind of application that someone might want, product recommendations, as well as things in generative AI.
Excellent. Thank you, David. Thank you, Michelle, for joining today's discussion. So I would like to get started right away. We discussed about having practical focus emphasis today. So Michelle, let me start with you. So what are the top AI trends that you're seeing? What are the top AI use cases that are being implemented in the financial industry?
So top of mind, fraud detection and prevention is the first one that could come in mind. Pretty much the use of AI to go through large volume of data and go through the identify any pattern or anomalies in the transactions that we are looking at and identifying whether or not we're looking at a fraudulent case or fraudulent activity. There's also the use case in the credit risk space where pretty much we are leveraging alternative data to also help identify a customer that present higher risk of default.
Okay. So I think I would like to go very deep into each one of them later. So David, what are you seeing from your vantage point of a vendor offering solutions into the marketplace?
So we see the continued use of traditional predictive models, ones that have been in place for decades at least, that use statistical techniques, but becoming increasingly more data-driven in the sense that you will have a simple 10, 15 types of information that are put into the model, and then you get a regression or something that's statistical in nature, but very much driven in a way that you can understand, and moving towards models where you will have 50, 100 different pieces of information that may come from many different sources, and then a more sophisticated type of model, a neural network, XGBoost, something of that nature, that performs the same kind of task, but now is a lot more difficult to understand, a lot more of a black box. So we're seeing more and more that these models are becoming part of the daily application of traditional processes. But the new generative AI capabilities are also becoming very important in a lot of different areas outside of traditional banking applications. So if we think about customer support, there's a very large trend to seek savings and costs for call centers by using generative AI that's got access to specific information that the customers may need to have data consent on, or policies, or applications internally where financial analysts are starting to leverage generative AI to do the research, to produce reports. And then we find document analysis generally summarizing mortgage applications, things that are leveraging the new technology in ways that are creative and mostly focused on cost cutting and efficiency.
Okay, so lots of operation related stuff. And then you brought up that magic word generative AI into the mix. So that's the one that brought AI into the mainstream. And but let me go back to Michelle's, what she started with. And Michelle, you mentioned fraud detection. And it has been, I heard many stories from banks, actually. I think just last week, one of the credit card companies said they are implementing AI. They went out publicly that in fraud detection. So that's interesting that I saw that note that they went out publicly last week, even though, companies have been doing it. So please tell me why you think AI is especially applicable for something like fraud detection. What does AI bring to make that one of the top use cases?
Yeah, so we have to think about what we used to do prior to the broad use of AI in financial industry, right? So in the past, when you looked at fraud models, we were pretty much looking into what's called the recency, frequency, and monitoring method, which pretty much segment the customers based on the past behavior. So we just look at the customer habit in terms of responding to promotional offers, and then identify whether or not the pattern that we're looking at is an evidence of a fraud activity or fraudulent activities. And this can become very difficult when you're dealing with a lot of data.
Yeah.
With the advance that we now have, we have the capability of collecting a lot and lot of data. All the transactions of the customer, you can look into his past activities, behavioral, from a behavioral perspective, so where the customer usually shop, the type of transaction that he makes, the amount that he usually spend on. All of this information now can be actually harvested to and leverage with models such as XGBoost, like David mentioned, that allow us to leverage all of those data and identify the key elements that are indicative of fraudulent activities. So while in the past, this will have been a very complex task to do just because of the amount of data we're dealing with, we now have the ability to do so. And that tremendously saves a lot of money because in a lot of cases, fraud-related laws are, you know, something that can truly impact a financial institution bottom line.
Interesting. The particular use case that you mentioned goes to the heart of any financial institutions. I mean, it could be credit card, it could be bank, because I think just like a retail, they have the merchandise not being accounted for. In the financial industry, I think the fraud is one of the top, from what I understand, the negative impact to the bottom line. So, David, going back to your point about Gen AI for the thing that you clearly mentioned is operational efficiencies, right? So can you give examples? I mean, the chatbot comes to my mind. It's one of the easier use cases to implement. So are you thinking of those things? And operational efficiencies are something much more deeper in the operations where Gen AI is making an impact in financial industry?
We could look at call centers, for example, where there's currently a lot of investment across banks to cut costs on their customer support agents. There's the initial contact from a customer and efforts to use chatbots there to do triage, to provide some information that is able to be routinely provided. And then there's a use with the agents themselves. So when they're talking to a customer, being able to type into a very simple chat interface and have that interface access policy, particular information about that customer, if possible, really speeds things up. This is very much a part of the initial wave of taking internal generative AI tools that might be tested in a lab or might be used internally with employees and to start to use that with customers themselves. I think the main use of generative AI has been somewhat ad hoc. I mean, employees just using ChatGPT to speed up their work and then bringing that into the bank will own it. And let's just make that internal ChatGPT system have access to what the bank wants you to have access in a secure and private way. So I think that was the initial stage, but we're moving towards the place where banks want to start automating and use that in a more serious way. So some cursory data analysis can have humans doing the work, but ultimately having their reports put together in whole or part by generative AI, but then having that turned into a routine task. There's a lot of startups that are building this kind of service so that it can continually scan information as it's being updated and be presented in people's desks. So there, I think a lot of different areas where this is being explored and it's starting to be used in a more serious way. But the main capital investments that I'm aware of are in call center.
So what you're saying is it started as ad hoc, almost like kicking the tires kind of a thing, and then now it's becoming much more formal into the operations kind of thing. And this goes into audience's question, by the way. So thank you for the first question from the brave member of our audience. And so the question, let me read it. So how can auditors rely on AI, and how can we show auditors that the AI used is reliable? How can the use of AI be documented to meet auditors' requirements? So, David, I did not have anybody write this question, and I did not write this question, but this goes to heart of what you guys do at Fairly AI, from what I understand.
Yes, it's probably the question that I would have asked to be put in front of me.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking. That's a fantastic question.
Yeah. I'm glad for the opportunity. So there's a lot of information that's involved in building, training, testing AI models. And then there's a lot of information that is required for people that need to do secondary testing or validation of that model that is independent. All of that information is valuable, and being able to put it together in a single place and automate the pulling of the right kind of information you need to establish conformity with standards that have been placed, as well as regulatory requirements, and then have everything tracked, versioned, timestamped, and attributed to the people that have been involved all in one place is a really important part of the process. Being able to leverage artificial intelligence in that process really makes it a lot more efficient. So you can have existing documentation from historical processes, from Git, from wherever you may be able to pull it, and then have artificial intelligence system like a RAG, retrieval augmented generation setup, access that data, and then leverage that to fill in a lot of very long and boring forms. AI can do that kind of work. We can also use AI for keeping track of what the changing regulatory situation is like. So we have a process where we pull in from information from a lot of feeds internationally to be able to understand what new regulations are coming out, and then leveraging AI to process those documents and put that stack of new requirements or potential requirements into a structured format. And finally, artificial intelligence itself can be used in the testing process. And so especially with generative AI, a large amount of research is going on now to use artificial intelligence as adversarial testing. So effectively, my AI bot goes and interrogates your AI bot, evaluates the responses, and then is able to assess the performance against ad hoc requirements. And that's what's important about this. If it's 5-10 things that you do routinely, a human can do this. But when you have the large space of potential risks that a generative AI model is going to open you up to, being able to automate all of that and leverage AI to do that process is vital. And so I think the future will be primarily, or at least heavily automated, using artificial intelligence processes on other artificial intelligence processes, and humans having an oversight position, establishing the policy, signing off on things, and so on.
So, I mean, I think the things that you mentioned are definitely the human in the middle kind of thing. It's not completely automated. So, which no. I think makes more definitely a sense to me. And then, but what you're saying is the ability to test and then test faster, probably more effectively. And these kinds of tools will give auditors, more tools to use AI to do their job better. So that's good. So Michelle, going back to your original statement about the use cases, I just want to probe a little bit more. Is the credit risk model. So I mean, something that I think you really work a lot in. So can you tell us what kinds of uses or use cases that you're seeing AI in credit risk models? Because the credit assessing the credit and all that stuff, it affects all of us. And there have been some situations where it has negatively impacted in how credit is being looked at for different parts of our society.
Sure. So pretty much, I guess one of my favorite use cases is the ability to leverage alternative data sources. And by alternative data sources, I mean payment, rent payment history, utility bills payments for population that used to be unbanked or underbanked, which didn't have the opportunity to have a credit score and do not have the ability to receive any sort of credit. Just leverage those information and then identify whether or not this particular person in that population is worthy of a credit, which would have not happened in the past. So the ability to leverage and handle that many data from various data sources, and I've heard and seen creative cases as well outside of the example that I gave, social media interaction and all of that, which can be put in the data and help understand we as a company should be looking into providing credit to a particular customer. So when I think of the key advances from AI perspective, for me, that's one of the critical use cases, because in the past, you'll have a huge population that will have not have the access to credit.
Yeah.
That now has that ability to be stored, to exist in the ecosystem, to actually have a chance to get a loan and improve the financial outlook. And I think that's key, right? You did mention, however, cases where this could have a negative impact on the population, and that's fair, that's true, right? Because mm-hmm. anything that is complex and complicated can be misused, right?
Yeah.
So without the right tools, without the right processes in place, understanding, there is the possibility to end up with a less desired outcome. Ultimately, the initial thought was to improve financial outlook for unbanked and the bank, but we might end up in a position where protected classes might actually be discriminated against without a proper look into how the model that we built is actually impacting those classes, right? So credit risk model is one of the key use cases, but it's also one of the use cases where a lot of cautious needs to be taken to ensure that as we're making advances, we are also protecting everyone that is involved in the process.
Actually, you bring up a really good point about making it equitable as we implement this technology. And you also mentioned to make that happen, we have to do some things, right? So, and David, let me come to you with this next section that we're going to address, where the challenges, right, of implementing AI. And I'm not talking about the technical challenges. I'm talking about the ethical and the regulatory challenges, which is a big, big piece of AI that is not associated with any other technology, and for the right reasons, of course. So in this section, we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into the ethical and regulatory challenges that AI brings, in the implementation. So my question to you, David, is that first thing is what kinds of ethical and regulatory challenges that organizations are having to deal with when you talk about AI in finance, right? And your company name is Fairly AI, so obviously you're trying to make it fair, and then we'll get into how to manage it. But let's first start with what kind of the challenges, some flavor of the challenges, if you could give us.
So we'll start with fairness. We have a very complex social political debate about fairness already, and it's very hard for anyone to have very clear sense of objective fairness in a process. But we do have, I think, agreement on principles, which are we want everyone to have equal opportunity to have the goods that the society provides for us. And we can argue about some of the details on that, but people should not be excluded from loans on the basis of the wrong pieces of information, more or less. So if you have a history of data that has been biased against certain protected classes for various reasons, and then you train your models on that data, it stands to reason that those reasons for excluding people that are learned from the data will be propagated, and those reasons may have nothing to do with their actual viability as someone applying for a loan. That can also be because of missing data. So machine learning AI can make things a lot better, as Michelle's been saying. I mean, access to more information can give opportunities to people who don't fit a traditional mold, and artificial intelligence is very good at adapting to complex information like that. But you have to test, and you have to make sure that the actual inputs to the model are not biasing some decisions for the wrong reasons. Gender and age also, of course, are together with race and ethnic background, really important to look at. So this is a core part now of the conversation at the regulatory level. I don't think it was as core a part before a lot of the newer artificial intelligence responsible AI community was pushing on this. Not, it wasn't absent, certainly. We have fair lending laws and so on, but it's now become a very key part of what people look at. So having an understanding of what information a model is looking at in order to make a decision, having some ability to trace back what parts of the information were most important in that decision, and then being able to present those facts at a population level and at an individual level is really the, I think, holy grail here. And I think it's incredibly important because it is an ethical question. People that are technologists, people that are bankers think the whole ethical questions don't really apply. That's a different domain. But if we're talking about having a systematic approach where you basically set up a machine that's going to allocate goods to people in society, another, that is a moral, political machine that you're putting out there, and it does need to be properly tested. So at a more detailed technical level, yes, but also across the board, looking at outcomes, being able to see the actual impact historically, as well as on models of how it might work on newer technologies simulating that.
And so, Michelle, on the same note, sorry, go ahead. So, Michelle, on the same note, are you, as a practitioner, like basically somebody who's actually applying these things on the director of the risk modeling, are you being burdened with some regulatory challenges that you have to take into consideration? So if you could give us a flavor of what you're having to face through your team is having to face because you're looking at AI in your business.
I think overall, and that's across the board from an industry perspective, there's definitely be an increase of scrutiny around the use of AI and machine learning. And then not just from the regulatory perspective, but also from the ethical perspective, making sure that there is no bias that is created by leveraging machine learning models. And I think that's truly the key point here. How do we make sure that ultimately the model that we put together, the model that are being used within credit risk space, for instance, do not create any bias or unfairness to any classes out there? That's really the key point. In the past, those were, similar concerns existed in the space of models. But now with the use of machine learning, this is an even more important question, because now we're dealing with some black box where it's not as straightforward to understand what comes into the model right? And how all of those variables that are being incorporated in the model interact with each other so that we know for a fact what we're getting as an outcome. We're now dealing with very complicated processes, machines, right? Which leverage a huge amount of data. Many variables are being incorporated in that machine learning models. Then on top of that, we cannot tell for a fact how those variables interact with each other. So The question of how to explain the outcome of the model, how do you trust the outcome of the model become even more important, right? So this is one of the key focus that I think, you know, anyone within that space is dealing with, because ultimately we need to provide the certification that the model being used from a credit risk space can actually be trusted, can provide a fair outcome, that anyone that goes through the models do receive a fair treatment. And that's the key focus over the last, you know, few months or years at this point of the use of machine learning in that space.
So Michelle, I have a follow-up on this one. Currently, in the regulatory environment, is it more self-regulation where institutions and organizations, they have their own certification mechanism? Because you mentioned certification, certify that. The other one is the explainability, like you said, you know, you have to be able to explain the models. So these things are all within the organizations. They set some policies and procedures and then they try to follow. Or is an external agency that is saying that, hey, these are the things you need to follow, these regulations or whatever that is. What is the stage currently?
I think it's a mix of both, right? So external agencies put together frameworks that we have to adhere by, right? Okay. But from what I've seen, they try not to be prescriptive. They provide guidelines of what is expected, and then organizations have to make sure that they respect and they meet, they are in compliance with those regulations, right? But then organizations own their own framework, their own processes. And ultimately, the burden is on the organization to showcase that they do respect the regulatory requirement. But I haven't seen any prescriptive method that has to be used. And that's not the way regulators usually work, right? They provide guidance. And they also want to make sure that organization has the ability to innovate. Right, so being too prescriptive tend to go against that approach.
Interesting. So David, so from an implementation perspective, I want to ask a kind of similar question, because you know European Union has put together a broad framework of policies and procedures of, you know, things that organizations should follow, and some other countries like Singapore and Canada are taking a lead role. And I think UK had, had a major conference last year, if I remember correctly, putting these frameworks in place. So if these things are coming from all over the place, right, how do you advise and assist companies as they're implementing AI to take all of this into consideration? Because you could be overwhelmed with having to consider all these things.
So I think there's a smaller core set of tests, processes, information that needs to be gathered that is largely overlapping with international regulations and requirements. And so being able to cover that core overlapping piece and then mapping that to the specific differences of different territories really allows a company to innovate, move quickly, while catching the major burden of the regulatory compliance, especially if you're operating in multiple territories. And a lot of that work does come down to some core principles. So having a handle on fairness, yes, also privacy, security, data handling, explainability as appropriate to the particular technology, transparency of some form, so having access to information, the people that need to make the right decisions are able to get that information and you're able to float that, being able to handle all of those core components and then adapt as needed when a particular regulatory request comes out or as you're able to proactively satisfy these requests, I think is the approach that most companies want to take. I think the broader picture is that the regulators have a kind of horizontal, here are the main core concerns across artificial intelligence applications, and here's a framework for thinking about it, typically principle-based. And then individual industries, applications, fill out the details, and that may not be regulatory, that may be in the form of standards bodies or industry best practices. And with the European Union, basically financial services at this stage with the EU AI Act has already been spelled out with enough detail that they haven't been very specific about how to handle that, just continue with the processes as they are. And with high risk processes, you need to have a post-market monitoring system that's coming into effect within the year. And so you do need to have a system that tracks all of the risks of your high risk AI systems, including in financial services.
Interesting. Thank you. So actually, I would like to wrap up this section with one question I just thought of to Michelle. So Michelle, so we talked about the use cases. We talked about the risks and challenges, especially from a regulatory and ethical side of the world. Let me ask you this question. As an organization is thinking through about AI, is the flow, first let's identify a business use case, right, where it might benefit, and then how to implement it, and in a typical non-AI technology, then what are the challenges and all those things? But when AI, where does the ethical regulatory challenges fit into the flow? Is it pretty early on that organizations have to think through, or they come much later? Oh my God, I don't want to get in trouble, so let me think through these kinds of things. So where is the landscape right now?
I think it's right at the beginning, right? Ultimately, when there is a need and a business case that come about, mm-hmm. The risk framework or the entire process is to look at it holistically, right? So as an organization, there is XYZ need. What are the requirements? What we need to solve for that particular need? And what are the risks associated with the solution that we like to leverage? That is being done upfront. And that's a field that is called new business initiative risk, that is pretty common in the enterprise risk management space. Right. So in that particular framework, any of the experts would come and look at the business case that is being proposed from the lens of the expertise. So that will be, from my hand, from a model risk side, I'll be looking at the use of machine learning, right? What we need, like from a data perspective, from the explanative perspective, right? Because if you're dealing with a chatbot, for instance, the need for explainability is not as high as the need of explainability in the credit risk space, right? So from my perspective, from a model risk perspective, those would be things that I would take into consideration and provide feedback overall for that particular use case. Now, another expert will come in from a cybersecurity risk perspective and then also provide its feedback. So that's what's called the enterprise risk management process, a new business initiative risk that look into pretty much all of the risk holistically. And that's kind of what is being done by organization at this point.
Excellent. Thank you. Actually, I was fascinated by how we are thinking about these kinds of things. So now let me move into the last section. Last section is very interesting. I'm sure lots of audience would like to participate in this section. This is about preparing financial professionals for the AI-driven future, right? So it's not about systems. It's not about processes. It's about us, right? It's about people, right? So how do we prepare ourselves? How do we prepare our employees and in organizations to AI-driven future? And right off the bat, there's an audience question that fits right into it. The fear that all of us have in terms of how are we going to be employed. So let me read this audience question to set the stage for the last section. Considering that finance experts are dealing with specific facts and numbers which are clear, and AI could solve it easily with high level of authenticity, do you believe that the most challenging topic of AI in finance would be the employment? Soon, no need for most of them. End quote. And by the way, I did not put any of the words, so just read as the question as it is. The person said, since no need for most of them. That's interesting. So David, what's your take on the impact of AI on people's employment, employability?
Well, I don't know the future. I won't claim to know the future. In the past, new technologies have typically provided more employment opportunities, but you have to have different skills. In this case, are we looking at the use of computers? Put a lot of, like, computers used to be humans. They would do math with pens, right? And then computers came into place. They lost their jobs, but a lot of people still have jobs in banks. Is it going to be similar to that? Or is it going to be similar to, say, the Industrial Revolution, when there was the invention of the loom and people that were knitting for a living suddenly did get out of work, and it took 50 years before people were reskilled? So there's definitely scary scenarios, macro level, and very wonderful, awesome scenarios where we don't have to do all the boring, tedious work and we can create a lot more value. And I think in banking, we're seeing some of this already. So I think the number of junior analysts being employed is dropping because a fewer, smarter junior analyst can just run a bunch of generative AI to scan documents and find patterns. There's like the call center as well. I think a lot of that will have employment impacts. And I think the idea that generative AI or the newer AI technologies can come up with much more high precision results is questionable. We've had a lot of the technology in place for a long time. It's only recently that we've had the wonderful ChatGPT type technology. And as we all know, it hallucinates, it's not reliable, it's not clear how much it will displace, and what was already in place in terms of automated models will continue to rely on, and it won't make a big difference. So my general thoughts are, learn to talk to AIs if you haven't already. Spend your 20, just sit down and spend hours and hours talking to some of the new models, see how they perform, see how you can leverage it, and you'll get a sense that it's going to be, you know, us talking to our robot buddies working together in some form or other, is how I see at least the immediate, you know, next 5 years.
Got it. So Michelle, so same question, what's your perspective on the employment and employability of AI in the financial industry?
I really think that it's a matter of staying agile, right? And leveraging AI to improve the quality of the work that we deliver. So in order for us to stay relevant, we have to understand what are the new trends, understand what's coming up, how AI can be leveraged positively in our organization and get ahead of it. I think the key is truly to stay updated, stay agile, attend conversations such as this one to understand what potentially could the future of AI hold, but also get familiar with the use of AI in our different organization. Just read through documentations, anything that we can find online that will help us understand how AI or machine learning works, and then see how we can take advantage of it. I think that's really the key. I mean, a few years ago, the type of models that we're dealing with were very basic statistical. Let's think about the logistic regression type. Now, if someone in my position did not try to stay ahead of what was coming up in terms of advance in the modeling space, I might have been out of work as well, right? Because ultimately what we need to do is stay ahead, stay informed, and then leverage the power of AI toward our advantage. So I think there's two things to do. Maybe we can ask ChatGPT what could someone in the financial space do to make sure that they stay ahead, leverage AI and improve the career path. I think that would be a pretty much good use case for us to try out. But ultimately, I think for me, the key is truly staying agile and staying alert and seeing how we can understand and leverage AI for our advantage.
So are you in the industry itself, not specifically about organization, but are you, Michelle, two questions. Are you seeing where some roles are being eliminated because we can automate using AI? That's one question. And the second question is about the people itself. Or do you see a sense of fear, anxiety in people as to what AI is going to do and how it's going to impact? So yeah, so first one is, are you if you could answer those aspects, please.
Right. So I did heard of cases where mainly in the customer service space, right, where the ability to leverage the chatbot truly reduces the need of having customer care, the number of customer care that we employees that we used to have. So that's definitely a threat from that perspective. Now, from the looking at, should we be scared of the advent of AI, how people are taking it, I think it's truly mixed. I've seen a lot of people being excited about opportunities that are brought in by AI. But then again, most of the folks that I spoke with that were a bit worried about the advance of AI truly did not take the time to understand how they could leverage AI for their own career. So if you are in a position where potentially you fall into, the example that I gave not long ago, which is customer care. Yes, potentially it could be something scary, but then again, that's a good opportunity to look into how we could leverage machine learning or AI to improve our own career opportunities as well.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. So I think now we are 50 minutes into the conversation. So let's think about wrapping it up. Again, before we wrap up, a request to the audience. Number one, you pre-register for upcoming talks. It's once a month. You should see on this channel. Number two is, before you log off, please give your feedback on today's session as well as any topics that you would like to see in this series. Okay, so please take literally 2 minutes to give your feedback. So with that, David, so we talked about the use cases, right? And then we talked about how Gen AI, which is what you are very excited about, how it, you know, it's going to add lots of new capabilities, new tools in the financial industry. And we talked about some of the risks and challenges that the technology is bringing into the fore. And we touched upon a little bit about the anxiety of people, of the things that, you know, how people might get affected. So what are the other topics we could have talked about, we didn't have time to talk about? Anything that you want to address now? And then also conclude today's topic.
Well, I think the positive side of this really needs to be emphasized. And I think one of the things Michelle said earlier is really important, that AI can be biased. Yes, it can cause a lot of continued discrimination. But on the other hand, financial inclusion is in many ways enabled by the use of AI to look at non-traditional data, something that a human doesn't have the time to do. If you're looking at someone in a call center, we've never had really great experiences with call centers before AI. Maybe now we can have great experiences. Wouldn't that be awesome? Does that employ more people? If that makes the business more attractive, and I'll go to that business because they have wonderful call centers, maybe they'll employ more people to make great call centers. And similarly with your coding. I mean, if you're not a coder, then you can worry software developers might be losing their jobs, or all of us who could never get anything accomplished with code, now we can. So, I mean, I would take a very positive view on it. And of course, a responsible one, and of course, one that fits your regulatory burden. But I mean, that's what we do at Fairly, is we try to enable the use of AI in a way that's safe and fair, because there is so much potential.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, Michelle, so as you're embarking for the new era with AI, and of course, you've been, you know, working on this one for at least 3 years. So what are your thoughts about what we should be doing? So you already mentioned, you know, how we should be agile, how we should have AI literacy. So any advice to organizations, how they should be looking at AI and how they should start about implementing AI in the organizations?
Yes, definitely. I think organization needs to look into what's called responsible AI. Outside of regulatory requirement, it's truly a matter of including in the organization culture the sense of responsibility when it comes to the use of AI across the board, right? So that allow for an outcome where there is risk of discrimination is being taken care of. Anything from an ethical perspective is also taken care of. From a data privacy, basically ask the question, would I feel comfortable being at the end user of that specific tool that we're putting out there? Was it built responsibly enough that I, as a person, as an organization, feel comfortable that it should be out there? And I think that's the key things that we should be looking to outside of the regulatory requirement, having some sort of culture within the organization when it comes to the use of AI.
So that is definitely something organizations have to think about doing it. I mean, is there a way you think, Michelle, that you could make that fabric of the organization, as opposed to some, like, let's say you're head of the organization, so you can think through making it responsible AI and all the stuff. But are there any procedures, any way that you could really make it very formal to make that happen?
Yes, there are plenty of frameworks out there for responsible AI that could be leveraged. Right.
Okay.
So those are very structured framework, principle based, that could be brought into the organization and turn into process and procedures that the organization can follow.
Fantastic. So that's great. Thank you very much. So David and Michelle, Thank you for your insightful comments, insightful discussion. And thank you for listening in, participating, and with your questions. With that, it is a wrap.